Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host and founder of Product Innovation Educators, where product managers become product masters. Project management is an important tool for us product managers and innovators, and an area where we have some choices. I often hear agile practitioners talk about the evils of more planned methodologies like waterfall and stage gate. And like most things, these areas are not so black and white, and the nuances are important. My guest, Chuck Cobb, is the perfect person to address these topics. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Project Manager's Guide to Mastering Agile, as well as four other books on agile project management and business excellence. He has also developed a very successful online training curriculum on agile project management, including a free course he's offering to listeners. You can get the summary of our discussion along with the transcript and links to Chuck's valuable resources, including that free e-course on waterfall and agile project management at theeverydayinnovator.com/078. Enjoy the discussion. Chuck, thanks so much for joining the Everyday Innovators today and being part of this podcast.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
I purposely sought you out because I was wanting to bring on a guest that could talk about project management kind of from the traditional perspective, because a lot of the listeners are in existing medium to large organizations, and also from the I'll say newer, but you know, agile principles have been around quite a while now, but quite a few of those same medium large organizations are starting to try to figure out how to adopt those and working through that process. And then a lot of our smaller organizations are already doing those sort of things where they fit. And I know you're a great guest to address kind of that whole perspective, that whole spectrum of project management. So thanks for being here. Let's just dive into that. So the two big general concepts we're discussing is that traditional versus agile project management. And typically we think of traditional being associated with the waterfall model. Can you describe that? And we'll get into this some.
Yeah, first of all, those terms, waterfall and agile, are widely misused. In a strict sense, waterfall was developed by Winston Royce in the 1970s. And in a strict definition, waterfall means a phase gate approach with, you know, approvals between phases and documentation and lots of stuff like that. The truth is that in today's world, when people say waterfall, the word is used very loosely, and it generally means anything that's plan-driven and not agile. So, for example, in the 1990s, a lot of iterative methodologies like Rational Unified Process or RUP came about that didn't fit the traditional Winston Royce waterfall model at all, but people still refer to those models as waterfall just because they're plan-driven. So that's important to understand, that there's a lot of confusion about that. And a lot of those terms, and the term agile also has many different meanings to different people. Many people talk about agile as if it were a specific methodology.
Right.
You know, it really isn't. You know, Scrum is very widely used, and when people say agile, they typically mean Scrum. But you know, so the word agile has some broad meanings as well. So when you know that whole. When people talk about agile, there's a lot of conversation to compare it to waterfall. And that conversation of comparing agile to waterfall is full of a lot of stereotypes and myths and misconceptions. Many people see it as a binary and mutually exclusive choice between two extremes. And that's not accurate, in my opinion. It's more like a continuous spectrum of alternatives from heavily plan-driven at one extreme to heavily adaptive at the other extreme. And it's more of a matter of fitting the methodology to the project and to the business rather than force-fitting a project and a business to one of those extremes.
So I have to go back to one point that you made. A lot of good things in there I want to dive into, but you and I and probably a handful of others are the only people that actually have read Dr. Royce's paper on the waterfall. I'm glad you mentioned that. Because this is what I find so interesting. So having come through a lot of this cycle myself in the 80s and 90s and on, and how we develop software, which is primarily my background in product development and management, adapting what we now consider, you know, from the 2000 on kind of frame, these agile approaches. But so much of this existed even way back into the 60s, because what I find amazing about Dr. Royce's paper was he lays out the waterfall, right? And the steps we go through in the stair-step order. And then the last paragraph in that paper says, and if that's all we do, we're going to surely double the time it takes to complete projects and double the cost. And what we really need to do is go back and do cycles of iterations through these steps. Right. And somehow that got lost, right? That's not what we think of when we think of waterfall.
Yep. I mean, it really requires some skill to understand all of these methodologies, both waterfall and agile, at a deeper level, and know how to blend them together and make them work. I mean, people do these methodologies mechanically sometimes. They like to have a cookbook approach to whatever it might be, agile or waterfall, and follow the steps and do it mechanically. And that kind of approach doesn't work very well. You really have to understand the principles and values behind the methodologies to know how to adapt them to fit a given situation. And that's what I have been really focused on.
Let's talk about what problem each of these were really meant to solve. So I like that you framed waterfall as a plan-driven approach is really the bigger picture. And so what kind of problem is a plan-driven approach meant to address?
A plan-driven approach works in situations that have low levels of uncertainty, like building a bridge across a river, and where there is a need for predictability. So, you know, if I have a situation that is relatively straightforward, it's well-defined, it's repeatable. The advantage of a plan-driven approach is it's repeatable from one project to the next. So you can take the lessons you've learned on one project and do better on the next project because it's similar and follows the same model. And it's cookbook. You can take a cookbook approach and given problem A and problem B that are both more or less the same problem, you can use the same approach over and over again, like manufacturing a product repeatedly. So that's the advantage of a plan-driven approach.
And then let's talk about the other one then. So what do you see as the purpose of Agile?
Well, Agile is kind of the inverse or the converse of that. Agile works best in environments that are uncertain, high levels of uncertainty. The example I've used in my training is finding a cure for cancer. If you were to set out to develop a project plan for finding a cure for cancer, it would be ridiculous to try to develop a detailed plan and milestones and all of that. There's just too much uncertainty, and it's a wasted effort to try to develop a detailed plan. And people aren't in that kind of situation. People are more concerned about the end goal of finding a cure for cancer than they are about having a detailed cost and schedule breakdown of what it's going to take to get there. So that's the nature of an adaptive or agile approach, is you have to start with some knowns. You don't typically start with a blank sheet of paper. You start with some knowns, but there are a lot of uncertainties that you have to resolve as the project progresses. And it's based on what's called an empirical process control model. And the word empirical means based on observation, meaning that as you go through the project, you're continuously adjusting both the product and the process to complete the product based on observation of what you've learned going forward, rather than starting out with a detailed plan that doesn't change throughout the project.
And because of that, looking for the observations and learning from that as the process goes on, I think that's why we see it fitting so well into product development and product management, because we're often, you know, these are innovative projects. We're often dealing with high levels of uncertainty, not knowing what kind of the next steps are, at least not until we get the plan made and we're really ready at the point where we can develop the product, which this is why the audience is wanting to know more information about, you know, how these things really come together.
You're absolutely right. Product development is a key area. Eric Ries has written a really good book that I like called The Lean Startup Approach. And it was written for lean startups, but it's really applicable to any company or any product development effort. The problem people make in doing product development is they will typically make a lot of assumptions about what they think people want in a product. And based on maybe hundreds of assumptions. They'll go off and develop, do an elaborate development effort to develop a product and bring it to market, and the product fails because they discover that their assumptions were wrong. And so, you know, Eric Ries talks about an approach based on not making assumptions, but making some hypotheses to say, okay, mm-hmm. here are the things we think are right or wrong, and we're going to test these things. And before launching into a full-scale, huge product development effort, there's a more limited effort to do some prototyping or something like that to kind of test those hypotheses before you commit to a full-scale development effort.
Yeah, absolutely, because that is the nature of our product management work is we don't know until we actually find out and set up those, tests to understand if our hypotheses are correct or not. And then we adjust from there.
Right.
So we have some, you know, purpose and benefits really associated with the plan-driven approach. When things are more predictable, we have low levels of uncertainty, and we need to make things repeatable. And I saw this recently in a housing development that went up close to where I live. And in 2 weeks, they had new houses standing there. It was just the most efficiently ran project I've seen for construction for a while. But it was very repeatable, right?
That's a great example. I mean, you know, we have a house in Florida down there, and it's a community of hundreds of houses. And there's like five different floor plans, and each floor plan has a limited number of choices that you can choose to customize the house. And that's the way the builder works. He turns out these houses by the hundreds, and it's a cookie cutter approach. He doesn't give you a lot of choice of changing the floor plan, or there's some minor choices of changing countertops or something like that. But it's a set process where they can chunk out these houses repeatedly over and over again.
Exactly. And then when we're developing products, we do have lots of choices we're dealing with because we're really trying to understand the customer's problem at a deep level and what kind of solution would really bring them value. And all the choices that we work through that. And so a more adaptive process makes sense for that, for sure. There does seem to be, when these topics come up, kind of this war that takes place. And it's not even like it's a sporting event where we have two sides rooting for, you know, teams. It's pretty much the statement that, you know, the waterfall is all bad and we need to do away with it. And Agile is all good. And that's the only thing we need to be using. Is it really that simple of a conversation?
No, it's not. And I like to say that saying Agile is better than waterfall is like saying a car is better than a boat. They're two different things, and each has advantages and disadvantages based on the environment that you're in. So Agile is not inherently good, and waterfall is not inherently bad. It's more a matter of fitting the right approach to the right problem.
Exactly. That's what it sounds like to me, that we need to be finding the clearly identifying the problem we have and then finding the right process and methodology that matches that problem. And that takes a little bit more skill, right?
Right, absolutely. And it's not just a black and white choice of choosing methodology A or methodology B and taking a cookbook approach. You have to be smart enough to in many cases, to adapt the methodology to fit the problem. Mm-hmm. And that really takes some skill to do that, particularly when you start blending Agile and I hate to use the word waterfall. Let's use the word plan-driven as a broader connotation. So when you start blending Agile or adaptive approaches with plan-driven approaches and figure out how to make those two things blend together, you know, first of all, there's not a lot of precedent for doing that. It's not a cookbook approach. So, you know, and you have to know both methodologies, plan-driven and Agile, and you need to know the principles behind them. It's not just a mechanical exercise of blending the steps together. You'd have to know how it makes sense to blend them based on the principles behind them.
So what are you seeing companies actually doing, or as you're talking to companies, how are they actually taking steps to incorporate more Agile practices into their work?
Well, I think it's all over the map. You know, it's there's a lot of companies that just want to jump on the Agile bandwagon and many times it's a superficial kind of thing. It's the latest fad, the latest thing. And they just jump on it. And typically, you know, there's some sort of commandment that comes down from corporate level that we're going to do Agile and everybody has to scurry around and start doing it. And And it ignores, you know, some of the training that might be needed to do it well, and some of the cultural change and organizational changes, et cetera, that might be needed to do it. So there's a lot of companies that are in that camp, I think, who just try to do it superficially. It might be just a brute force approach to get it done because they see it as a way of getting products to market quicker. And many times it winds up as just a brute force approach where, you know, they wind up working people overtime and weekends to get things done quicker and call that agile. And that's not the right approach, obviously. So doing it right requires, you know, training. Agile is heavily dependent on training and coaching you to do it right. You can't just take a cookbook approach like Waterfall and do step one, two, three, four, et cetera. It really requires some good intelligence among everyone on the team, developers, scrum masters, et cetera. Everyone has to be intelligent enough to figure out how to do things and adapt the process and the product as they go along. So it requires a lot more skill. And then at a corporate level, you know, it could require some corporate change because there's some significant cultural changes that may be required. You know, in the typical plan-driven environment, the business people, you know, typically throw something over the fence to the IT department and say, here's what we want. You know, you guys go off and do it and then come back later and tell us when you're done. You know, so it's not a collaborative process at all. So Agile obviously changes that. It requires breaking down those walls and barriers and developing a lot more of a collaborative partnership approach between the business users and the developers. And that can require some significant cultural and change in a corporation. So many companies kind of neglect that and don't know what they're getting into and just jump into it and do it superficially.
And I think there's some myths associated around what Agile really is and in this area too. And I think back to, you mentioned the, you know, Agile isn't just one approach, right? Today we often see it being managed through a Scrum approach. But when the manifesto first came out about how we need to be approaching problems differently, we were really focused on software projects at that time when the manifesto came out. And we had things like crystal, you know, development and then extreme programming. And I remember encountering groups that said, hey, we're doing extreme programming, which had some basic tenets, like you programmed in pairs, you know, two people always coded together, learned from each other, and we had code reviews and structured approaches. But so many companies would say, oh, yeah, we're doing extreme programming. Well, what does that mean? We don't document anything, right? We stop documenting, and we have a lean approach to documentation. Yeah. And I still run into that myth now when it comes to Agile. That means, oh, well, we stopped building all those documents. Well, we built those documents for a reason, so what have you changed?
Yeah. Yeah, this whole thing feels like deja vu to me. I mean, I've seen this pattern before. I did a lot of work with Six Sigma in the late 90s and early 2000s, and I actually published my first book in 2003 on business excellence, and a lot of it was on Six Sigma and process improvement. But there was a very similar pattern at that point in time. Six Sigma was the latest, what I call the program du jour, the latest management fad that people wanted to jump on. And, you know, they frequently hung up a Six Sigma sign outside the building and wore green belts and black belts and all that. And, you know, a lot of it was superficial. And I did a lot of interviews of companies at that time. And I found that the companies that were really doing it well, it wasn't even obvious that it was Six Sigma. They might not have even called it Six Sigma. It might have been the XYZ company improvement approach. And if you looked at it closely enough, you'd see that it incorporated all the tenets of Six Sigma. But, you know, it wasn't even obvious that it was Six Sigma because it was so well integrated into the way they do business. Mm-hmm. And I see a similar pattern today. You know, there's a lot of people going through the motions of doing Agile and the mechanics. But, you know, only a few companies have really, you know, internalized it and do it really well. The companies that are in the software product development business, like, you know, Intuit that develops QuickBooks and TurboTax and so forth, those kinds of companies are further along because Agile fits much better in that kind of company. The business model and the financial models of that kind of company fit very well with an Agile approach because you typically for a product develop a budget for a product and you say, here's the budget for ongoing maintenance and enhancement of this product, and you rely heavily on the product team to make some detailed decisions about what they do with it. A project-oriented company is very different. Where there's a company like Walmart or whatever, or any other company you pick that's not in the business of developing products per se, it has a project-oriented environment. It's a much more difficult problem because the financial model is based on some sort of portfolio management of a set of projects and trying to figure out how you're going to get the best return on these projects. And for that reason, it doesn't fit as cleanly with an agile approach.
And when it comes to fitting in these approaches into those kinds of different companies, I think we really need to emphasize what you talked about, the corporate and the culture changes to expect. Because I've seen so many times, this is really a different way to do work. And anytime we're asking someone to do work differently, that personally is jeopardizing to us as employees, right? Because we know how to be successful. That's what we have been doing. And this is why we're often really resistant to changes, because now we're being asked to do something different that we don't know if we can be successful with or not. And the cultural elements and the structural elements of a company are, I think, really big, important levers for if an organization can change how they approach project management and developing products. And if they can move from a more of a plan-driven methodology to more of a adaptive methodology.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. And, they're doing Agile requires some rethinking at a lot of different levels. You can't do Agile at just a project level and a tactical level and have at a strategic high level, have an environment that's based on, 5-year strategic plans that don't change or something like that. Those two things are kind of inconsistent. One of the big success stories that I've written about in my book is a company called Valpak. They're the company, they're based down in Tampa, Florida, that produces those blue envelopes with coupons in them for discounts on various things. And they've got a very impressive setup where they've done a top-to-bottom implementation of Agile. They have a plant in Tampa, Florida, where paper comes in on big rolls at one end and goes out as coupons stuffed in envelopes, millions of envelopes at the other end. And it's all totally automated and all very dynamic and very agile. And they're my poster child for, a successful implementation of Agile at all levels.
It sounds like a place I need to go find a case study to bring to
light. There's a case study in my book on that.
Wonderful. We will highlight that for listeners and make sure they know how to get to your book also, and talk about that in just a moment. Sure. And maybe you can connect me to someone at Valpak. We'll do a future interview about their experiences there. And we've talked a little bit about this, integrating these approaches, the plan approach and the more adaptive approach. Specifically, when it comes to product development, the one plan approach that's usually in place, again, in medium to large size companies, is some version of stage gate, a phase gate process, where we're really doing work in chunks, and then we have a gate decision to decide if the product concept needs to continue on, or if there's really better uses of our resources, right? If there's some roadblocks that suggest that this particular product concept needs to be abandoned and let's go, work on other projects instead. And that sort of plan process, where stage gate is really the management tool to help us address risk and manage these development projects. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Agile being plugged into that and how that works out?
Yeah. There's various ways of doing that. And you could be more or less Agile. And as I've said, it's not a binary and mutually exclusive mm-hmm. choice between, being extremely Agile or not being Agile at all. Valpak is a great example of that. They've got a portfolio management approach where they've got a portfolio of projects that are going on continuously, and they review those projects continuously. So rather than making a go, no-go decision, in a pure plan-driven environment, what you might have is you might have a high-level strategic plan that doesn't change, and you've got some portfolio management decisions that are made like once at the beginning of a project that you commit funds to that project and you might review it sometime later. In a good Agile environment like Valpak is one I would point to as a good environment, it's much more of a continuous process. They're continually reviewing dynamically changing projects and, as well as their higher level strategic portfolio perspective on an ongoing basis. The senior managers are continuously adjusting their priorities based on what they want and continuously learning from different projects about what's working and not working and you know, adjusting, making adjustments on an ongoing basis rather than, you know, making some kind of a long-term commitment to a project and then only reviewing it at certain stage gates. It's much more of a continuous process. But again, there's no one way to do that. There are all mm-hmm. kinds of different approaches depending on what level of agility is appropriate in a given company.
I'm curious how they pull off that, you know, ongoing review of the projects, because in a as you mentioned, in a typical stage gate sort of approach, there's these fixed reviews. Companies will adapt these differently, and some companies are on a actual schedule, right? And periodically, we know when the next review is. That tends to slow process down, slow progress down over time. But other companies will adapt the reviews as they're kind of needed. But it probably sounds scary to someone that's in that traditional stage gate sort of approach to think about doing this on a continuous or ongoing basis. Are they doing like a, you know, like we would have a stand-up meeting for daily work on a project? Are they doing something like that for a portfolio review?
Well, yeah. I mean, the difference, one of the big differences is in a true plan-driven approach, you might not see any real results out of the project till the very end. You know, if a plan-driven approach is broken up into a design, you know, design, test, et cetera, methodology, at each stage gate, you really don't have product to show people that they can look at and say, yeah, that's going in the right direction. You can only evaluate progress against tasks. In an agile project, you know, it's much more of an incremental and iterative development approach. So you actually have something to show people that they can look at and make a decision on to say whether that's going in the right direction or not. Mm-hmm. So it allows much more dynamic decision making. So, you know, in the case of Valpak, for example, they start out with some strategic objectives that are in agile terminology, they're called epics or themes. And they say, here are the senior managers will sit down and say, here are five strategic objectives for the next year or quarter or whatever it is. And then here are our projects that line up with those themes that we want to accomplish. So it's really well integrated from top to bottom, that the goals of the senior objectives, senior executive objectives line up very well with the projects. And they can continuously look at those, say, okay, here's an objective we intended to accomplish. We had a product review of project X. Let's see how that is going against our strategic objective and see if it's really heading in the right direction. So you have a lot more information to make decisions on. You're looking at real products or incremental elements of products rather than just looking at progress on completing tasks.
Right. And a lot of those incremental elements in the early stages, back to what you talked about in Lean Startup, is those assumptions that we make that we're now turning into hypotheses and really testing what we know and what we don't know. And you quickly get to see results of, are you on the right track or not?
Exactly.
Very good. What are some of the common issues that organizations encounter when they are pursuing the use of Agile? We talked on some of the issues that come up in terms of you know, jumping on the bandwagon and not really being prepared for that with not having the training and the structure and the place and the like. But as companies are rolling down the road a bit with Agile, do you still see things popping up that we can help them with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a journey. I like to say it's a journey, not a destination. You know, there's an ongoing learning effort, and there are stages of learning associated with getting into Agile. You know, it can take years for a complete transformation of a major company. You might start out small. You might start out with just a pilot effort on one or two projects, or a very small scale effort, and expand it. You might not try to take on changing the whole company all at once. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different stages that you can go through for a major enterprise level transformation.
And that's good advice to start with a pilot. You know, maybe identify one group that can take this on and that is eager to do so, and try apply it to a project. And then see how that kind of emerges, you know, into other organizations, other parts of the organization too. because we should start seeing some real benefits from that work and other groups taking notice of those benefits and wanting to also incorporate that into the work they're doing.
Right.
So it's a good way to build up that kind of case study and some evidence and get other people to join in. Very good. Well, I appreciate you reviewing some of the aspects of these project management approaches that we see used so often for our product work and moving from a plan-driven sort of approach into more of an adaptive world and how we might be able to get there. I also asked you to bring an innovation quote for us. I always like to have our guests share that towards the end. What did you bring? What's the story around that?
Well, that's an interesting story. It's a long story. It goes back about 4 or 5 years. About 4 or 5 years ago, I got my inspiration for going down this path from a couple of places. One is I was at a PMI meeting with a panel of 7 CIOs from the Boston area, and they made a comment that project management has to change. You know, instead of just focusing on managing projects to meet cost and schedule goals, that project managers have to take a broader focus on meeting business results, whatever that means. And that was one thing. And then about the same time, I was also going to an Agile meetings. At one of the Agile meetings, there was a very well-known author. I won't mention the name, but take it for granted, it was a very well-known author in the Agile community. And she positioned herself as a reformed project manager who had been in the project management profession at a senior level for 15 or more years. And she said she pretty much had to unlearn everything she knew about project management to get into Agile. And she made some, quite frankly, disparaging remarks about what project management is and how narrow-minded it is and so forth. And she made a comment that I will never forget. And she said, Agile project management is an oxymoron. And I was almost ready to walk out of the presentation at that point. But, you know, that quote has stuck in my mind since that time. And it's inspired me to say, you know, there's got to be a way that these two approaches of plan-driven project management and Agile fit together. And I've set a goal to myself to try to help bridge that gap over the years. I've published 3 books on Agile project management since that time. I've given numerous presentations at PMI and Agile communities. And I've also recently launched a major Agile project management training initiative that has over 13,000 students. So that has been my passion since that original time, to try to help bridge the gap between the Agile and traditional plan-driven project management communities. And it was that one quote that said, Agile project management is an oxymoron. It has stuck in my mind since that and has inspired me to do this.
Yeah, it sounds like it lit a fire, you know,
yes,
that inspiration. And, you know, there's some practicalities here, which is, you know, I'm sure there's probably some philosophical debates that go on about these different perspectives. But the practicalities are, you know, project management is well established in companies, you know, certainly medium to large size companies. And we can't suddenly just throw out the practices that we have used for so many years to adopt something that for the organization, at least, is unproven, right? It might be proven in other organizations, but that doesn't particularly matter if it's not proven in the organization, you know, struggling with this.
Right.
And we need a bridge, right? We got to make these things fit together. So appreciate all your work doing there. And you mentioned the coursework that you're engaged in now, and you have some wonderful books on this topic. Share how listeners can find out more about your books on Agile project management and also about the courses you're doing.
Okay. Well, there's 2 sources I would point people to. The first one is my blog site, which is at managedagile.com. And my blog site has over 60 to 70 articles that I've written over a period of time about various aspects of Agile project management that are all completely free. So there's a lot of good reading on that blog site. The blog site also has pointers to my books and videos that I've done. So that's one good source of information. The other is the Agile Project Management Academy.com. And that is my brand new website that I have taken 6 of my Agile project management courses and opened them up there to anyone who's interested in them. It's a well-integrated curriculum on Agile project management. And again, it's designed around a pragmatic real-world perspective to help people really learn how to blend agile and traditional plan-driven project management together in the right proportions, and to see them from a fresh new perspective, to see them as complementary to each other rather than competitive. So it's agileprojectmanagementacademy.com is the source of my online training.
And when it comes to the books that you've written, which book would you suggest people start with if they want to learn more about moving into agile project management?
Yeah, as I've said, I've written three books on agile project management. And, you know, this is an evolving area, of course. So my latest book, of course, you know, I think reflects my latest thinking, and it's one I would recommend. And it's called Mastering Agile Project Management, The Project Manager's Guide to Mastering Agile Project Management, Mastering Agile. You can find it on Amazon, but you can also find at my blog site, managedagile.com. There's an abstract of the book, a brief abstract of the book, and a pointer to where you can get it if you're interested. And it has several case studies in it. There's a complete case study on the Valpak company that I mentioned, and there's two or three other major case studies in the book. One is on Harvard Pilgrim Medical in the Boston area here, who had a very large project involving more than 100 Agile teams. And when you have a large project like that, it has a lot of moving parts, and it can't be done without some level of project and program management.
Very good. And I'll make sure all those links are in the show notes, to make it easier for everyday innovators to find that information. And also, right now, you've been offering one of your courses for free, Learn the Truth About Agile versus Waterfall. And I don't know how long that's going to be for free, but I want to mention it to our audience. Yep. I found that to be a really good resource, and I'll make sure there's a link to that also.
There are actually two courses for free. That is that one. That one is just a brief course. It's only about 45 minutes long, but it's designed to help people develop a fresh new perspective on how they see Agile and Waterfall as complementary to each other rather than competitive. Mm-hmm. And then the other free course I offer is How to Prepare for PMI ACP Certification, which is, you know, addresses PMI ACP certification from a broader perspective of more than just getting through the exam. It's really, you know, what does a project manager do as an agile project manager? And that role is not well defined. And how do you develop the skills for doing that in the real world?
Excellent. Thanks for sharing those resources. Listeners, check out the show notes for all the details on that. And Chuck, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening and sharing this podcast with other product managers and innovation professionals. Find the summary of the discussion, transcript, and valuable resources, including Chuck's free e-course, at theeverydayinnovator.com/078. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.